Good morning. I'm going to pick up really where Katrina left off and talk about what we learned from the community members who we interacted with about what they think the research needs are. So she shared with you a whole variety of health concerns that people have, and some of those translate directly into topics that people would like to see researched, and some don't. Well, too far away, sorry. But anyway, before I do that, I just want to mention one of our goals in the interviews was really to reach saturation on the ideas. So Sarah shared a lot of numbers. I'll share a few. But as Katrina mentioned at the beginning, I'd ask you not to put too much emphasis on the numbers, but to really note that where we're sharing ideas, it's where we heard themes over and over. And even with our smallest sample of people who were supportive of the industry, the things I'm sharing with you were where we really felt we reached saturation. We heard it in every interview with those folks, that kind of thing. So. Oh, I don't have any relationships to disclose. And then in terms of what I'm going to talk about, I think it's interesting to note that regardless of what position people were in, what state, their role, almost everyone, there were maybe two interviews where people did not identify research needs, and they were identifying research needs to inform decision making. So when someone said, I want to know more about water quality, it was because I want to create an approach to drilling that is protective of health and the environment, or because I want to make sure in my community we are protecting public health and the environment. So I'll talk about some of the topics, and then there was also a body of comments on the process of research and how we support and conduct research. So first, one of the areas of comment, about 40% of the participants highlighted, we need baseline study. And we need baseline study before drilling begins. And that sounds obvious, but the real concern, especially in New York and North Carolina, was we don't have drilling yet, but we'll have no way to know what the effects are if we don't set up a baseline. And we don't have good baseline data on air and water quality, for the most part, in our states. The conversations around baseline study focused on, so what parameters need to be tested, and there wasn't general agreement. There were lots of questions about, in part because we don't know about what's in the fluids, and I'll say more about that in a minute, but what should we even be testing for, how often, where. So the interviewees who identified baseline testing needs also recognized that opens up lots of questions. And then there was a lot of conversation about how we cover the cost of baseline testing. This issue of a desire for baseline testing came up in every state and with people having all positions, meaning opposed to drilling, supportive, and neutral. Now, following on that, there was a strong call for ongoing environmental monitoring. So in Ohio, where it's already active, or in New York and North Carolina, once drilling begins, if it begins, we need to be measuring air and water quality so that we can be taking any actions needed. And it really was a focus on protecting health with this kind of monitoring. This was the first place where interviewees raised the issue of wanting to have central and publicly accessible data repositories. Transparency and data access was a recurrent theme that I will also talk about more. And there was a lot of conversation about the costs and that public budgets can't absorb the costs of this additional monitoring or the baseline testing, and so how are we going to pay for this important sampling that's needed? In terms of human health effects, over half, over 60% of the interviews identified specific health effects. And this is kind of interesting because, as Katrina pointed out, when we asked what are your health concerns, people went right to determinants of disease, you know, with a few exceptions. But here, when we said what are the research needs, they went to specific health effects. You can see them listed here, you know, ranging from endocrine disruption to cancer to respiratory disorder and others. So our participants were able to identify, these are the health effects I'm concerned about, and I'd like there to be more research about how do drilling operations affect these health endpoints. I think this comment was, I put this quote here because it was representative of the conversation on health effects, which is there are more questions than there are answers when it comes to health effects of drilling operations. And there was conversation about, so what methods should be used? There wasn't agreement, but the things that were raised were epidemiology studies, health impact assessment, and case studies. And I'll comment on each of those. I'll comment on HIA and case studies more. I'll just say with epi, because our interviewees were these thought leaders in their community. A number of them did have background in public health or environmental health sciences. And so folks who were really comfortable with epi were saying, we need epi studies. And then some of the community members who have looked to epi studies for cause and effect and haven't received it and were very critical and said, no, epi studies aren't the answer. So there was some discussion about what is the right way to get information on health effects for decision making. One way that came up primarily in New York, and I think that's influenced by the political discussions in New York, was health impact assessment. And for those of you who were in the prior environment section session just next door, there was a great example of how HIA has been used in Galveston. And the presenter there really emphasized its value in identifying some of the cumulative issues and also just looking at how effects are distributed across the community. And I think the commenters from New York were hitting on those same reasons for wanting HIA. So besides, as this quote says, you know, looking at where the gaps are, that was an important thing. But people also did raise the issue of, I want to know about cumulative risk, and I want to understand how these impacts are distributed. And notably, I mentioned it was raised in New York, but it was all positions in New York who asked for this approach. So supportive, opposed, and neutral with respect to drilling. I have also mentioned that case studies were brought up as a way to share information about health effects. And particularly, the interviewees said, I'd like to learn more about what's happening in Pennsylvania, Colorado, Texas, West Virginia. So what's happened in those communities, what health outcomes or impacts can be attributed to the drilling, and how the community respond. People really felt that they could learn from places where drilling is happening. And then these two quotes that I put up here actually touch on a completely different issue, well, not completely different, interrelated, but economics. And that came up. We had a whole host of, even though we were framing these interviews in the context of community health, we had a whole host of other issues that were raised as research needs, and one of them was economics, and in particular looking at, as the first quote says, you know, so there's this uptick of wealth, but then it goes in the other direction, and what does that mean for our community? And I note that both of these interviewees were supportive, were strong supporters of drilling in their communities. And then the second one was a local government representative saying, okay, but what's going to happen when it's over? Is there going to be slum and blight? And because drilling is happening in other places, we have at least some evidence. We'd like to have those case studies, learn more about it, so we can be best prepared if it's going to happen in our communities. This is, again, that graphic that Sarah showed, and I wish we could blow it up more. As we hope it will look on the web, we have little red circles. There are people. One of the things we got most strongly from our interviews was there's all this information on the web about drilling operations, but we aren't putting people in the picture. So we have little people in there, and they will be part of the rollover so that you can see we are all part of this conversation. But anyway, I have it here because another line of comments was about the exposures on site. When I think about research needs, I think about, well, there's a site in a community, and there are lots of things happening on that site that I want to know about. And the biggest one, not surprising to anyone, I think, will be the chemicals in the fracking fluids. People want to know, but not just that disclosure piece that's really been in the media, what's in them, but also, if we knew what were in them, what are the health effects of those different compounds? What, if anything, do we know about them in mixture versus individually? So there was a whole line of questioning from all states, all roles, and all positions on that piece of the puzzle on site, the fracking fluids. And then there was another line of what happens to the fracking fluids when they interact with the naturally occurring radioactive materials or other chemicals on site. There were, of course, questions about methane, silica, VOCs, particulate matter. But it was definitely, as this quote at the bottom suggests, you know, the synergistic effect of the toxic brew. I think you can guess the position of that particular commenter. But that I like that quote because it highlights people recognize things are interacting. And even if we knew something about the norms effects, we don't necessarily know what happens when the norms get mixed with the other chemicals in the fracking fluid. So, and all of that has implications for health. And these thought leaders in these communities were really aware of that. Another line of comment that relates to operations on site was very technology focused. And so what are the alternatives to what's happening at these sites? You know, what can we do that conserves more water? What are the alternatives in terms of wastewater disposal? There was a segment of people who really said, okay, in my community, this is either happening or I accept that it's likely to. So how can we ensure that the best technology that's been shown to be the most protective of health and the environment is being used? And I really like this comment where this person says, it's a big activity, it's not in one spot, so what happens when all these moving parts start moving together? And that was really the question of people who lived close to drilling sites or likely drilling sites. You know, this isn't just about workers, although workers were one of the primary groups of concern. This is about the people who live nearby and the whole extended community from a public health standpoint. So these interviewees were very aware of that. So then another important line of comment, especially for those of us involved in the research enterprise, was about how we do the research. And there was concern about, or comments about, how we conduct it and also how we fund it and who funds it in particular. And in these conversations is where distrust of industry really came up strongly, tied in part to, Katrina mentioned, the gag rule in Pennsylvania and some non-disclosure issues. So there's been a lot of coverage of that in the media. Some people who we interviewed have actually directly interacted with those non-disclosure agreements. And so there was a very real and present distrust of industry and concern that information wasn't being shared. And I just say that because that fuels then this very strong desire to see, have open data access, you know, publicly available data and transparency in the research process. And it also fueled a conversation about who should fund the research. There were some who said industry ultimately benefits the most from these operations and they have the most resources, so industry should fund it. And there were others who said, no way, I can't trust that money. I want to see the federal government or other sources fund it. And there was no agreement. I just raised for you that there was real discussion about the credibility of the funding sources for any kind of health effects or environmental health sciences research. I do want to take this opportunity to mention that there is a working group from the NIEHS-funded Environmental Health Sciences Core Centers, and we refer to ourselves as the Intercenter Working Group. And this group has been working in parallel with our needs assessment. The group is primarily environmental health scientists from these centers, but there are some of us from the community engagement side have also participated, and community engagement has been part of the conversation all year. But this group came to the same question that I'm talking about from the community perspective. What are the research needs? They came to this question as environmental health scientists and said, well, I've looked at the literature. Here are the questions that I see. So it was kind of interesting to be doing them in tandem because we did see quite a bit of overlap, and we were also able to take these community concerns and then feed them into that research process. But I'll just mention that we hope to publish some recommendations from this group in the coming 6 months or so, so you should look for that. But definitely air and water pollution were the biggest areas of concern for the environmental health scientists, and then also a number of recommendations relating to how to engage communities. Trevor Penning, some of you may know, who's at UPenn, is the convener of this group. You're welcome to ask me about it if you'd like more information, or certainly contact Trevor. And just one other thing before I wrap up. We also, our group here, Sarah, Katrina, and I, and then Trevor and his outreach group, now have a second follow-on grant from NIEHS where we're going to look at risk perception in the four participating states. And so we really will, this one will be a random sample of 900 people, and we're going to try to get some numbers where we can, our next presentation will be able to focus on the meaning of the numbers more so than the thematic approach. But we'll be looking at accountability and trust in particular, and whether drilling is active or not, and how that influences people's risk perception. So wrapping up the research needs piece of this needs assessment, I see that we have a time-sensitive opportunity to take this community input and influence the research process. I mean, as we said, some states haven't yet started, so now is the time to sort of figure out who should fund the research, what are the key research questions, what data do we need up front, and do it right. And that opportunity will slip away as drilling becomes implemented in states where it's not already being implemented. Clearly, I think you saw that the community health concerns Katrina initially identified really can inform the research agenda. People have specific research questions that arise from those concerns, and I think there's a real opportunity to even in some cases have CBPR, community-based participatory research projects. So, you know, community engagement should be part of all of these research studies, and it can go from one end of the spectrum to the most engaged CBPR, but I think there are real opportunities for that. And there's no question that transparency, public access to data, credibility are critical. So thank you.